All right, so as lawyers and law students, we deal with contracts like all the time, right? But have you ever stopped to think about how something as simple as like the design of a document could actually make it unenforceable?
Oh, yeah, you'd be surprised. And that's actually what we're going to be looking at today. We're diving deep into Yager v. Skiing Enterprises. And this case, it actually went all the way up to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And it shows just how, like, a poorly designed liability waiver can have some pretty serious consequences, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this case has it all right. It's not just about legalese. There's a real human story at the center of it. So, back in 1992, we have Michael Yager. He buys a family ski pass from Hidden Valley Ski Resort. I'm sure he signs the application, probably not thinking too much about it at the time. And then tragically, his 11-year-old daughter Tara is later killed when she collides with like an unpadded concrete base of a chairlift tower.
Yeah, it's just an awful situation. And naturally, the Yager family, they sue Hidden Valley, claiming they were negligent for not having any padding on that tower. But Hidden Valley, they come back and they say, no. The waiver that Michael signed, it protects us from this kind of liability.
And that's where things get interesting, right? Because the waiver itself never actually used the word negligence. So Hidden Valley, they're arguing that skiing just has these inherent risks and that this accident was just, unfortunately part of that. But the question becomes, can a concrete tower really be considered, an inherent risk of skiing?
Yeah, and that is the big question that the Wisconsin Supreme Court ultimately had to grapple with. And, you know, it's interesting because the lower courts, they actually sided with Hidden Valley. Yeah, they granted them summary judgment based on that waiver.
So at that point, it seemed like, pretty clear-cut, open and shut case for the resort.
Yeah, it seemed like a done deal
until the Supreme Court gets
until
involved.
Supreme Court comes in.
So what made them see things so differently? Why do they overturn the lower court's rulings?
Well, they basically flipped the script on this whole thing. They used this two-part test. And the first part was, did the waiver unmistakably state that negligence claims were being waived? And second was, the document designed in a way that made it super clear to the person signing it, you know, what they were actually agreeing to? And Hidden Valley failed on both counts.
Wow. So let's break that down a little bit. What was so problematic about the waiver's language specifically?
Okay, so Justice Babbage, who wrote the majority opinion, he pointed out some key issues with the language. First of all, the phrase inherent risks in skiing, like, that wasn't defined anywhere in the waiver. So does that automatically include negligence by the resort? And, you know, courts across the country, they're actually split on this question. Yeah, it's not as straightforward as you might think. So in this case, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, they said, look, the waiver's too vague on that point.
So it sounds like it wasn't just what the waiver said, but also how it was presented, like visually how it was laid out.
Exactly. The court wasn't just looking at the words themselves. They were also looking at the context. Like, for instance, the form was simply titled application. It wasn't release or liability waiver or anything like that. And the waiver itself, it was just buried in there. You know, no bolding, no italics, not even a separate signature line. It was just kind of tucked away. So the court was basically saying, would a reasonable person even realize that they were signing away these rights?
So I'm curious, even if the language about negligence had been crystal clear, like perfectly worded, could the design alone, the way it was presented, could that have been enough to tank Hidden Valley's case?
It's a good question. The court was definitely concerned about the missing language regarding negligence. You know, that was a big deal. But that poor design, I mean, it certainly didn't help Hidden Valley's case at all. It just kind of added to this overall sense that the waiver wasn't clear enough for it to be legally enforceable, you know?
This whole situation makes me wonder about, how courts view these exculpatory contracts in general. Do they tend to dislike them? Is there sort of like a public policy element at play here?
Oh, absolutely. Courts are generally pretty wary of these types of contracts because they can create a situation where companies are less likely to prioritize safety. You know, if they know they're off the hook no matter what happens, why bother going the extra mile to prevent accidents, right?
So in this specific case, the court was worried that upholding this waiver would essentially let ski resorts get away with, neglecting basic safety measures. Like, come on, padding those concrete towers near the ski runs doesn't seem like that big of an ask.
Exactly. It's one of those things where it's like such a small detail, you know, padding a concrete structure, but it could make such a huge difference in terms of preventing serious injuries. So the court was definitely sending a message that, you know, safety should be a priority.
Yeah, for sure. So what happened after the Supreme Court voided the waiver? Did the case go back to the beginning?
Yeah, basically. It went back to the trial court. And without that waiver to protect them, Hidden Valley had no choice but to face the Yager family's negligence claims head on.
This is a powerful reminder that clarity in contracts, it's not just some abstract legal principle. It's something that can have really serious real-world consequences.
Yeah.
Especially when you're dealing with liability waivers.
Yeah, it's a tough lesson that Hidden Valley learned the hard way. I mean, they could have potentially avoided this whole legal battle if they had just paid closer attention to the wording and the design of their waiver from the get-go.
You know, we've been talking a lot about Yager v. Skiing Enterprises and how it really exposed the weaknesses in that liability waiver.
Yeah.
But this case goes way beyond one ski resort, right? Like,
yeah.
It seems like this should be a wake-up call for any business that's using these waivers.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, this case really highlights how there can be this huge imbalance of power between the person who's signing the waiver and the business that's trying to protect itself. Because, like, you know, a lot of times people feel like they don't have a choice. Like, if they want to go skiing or do whatever activity it is, they have to sign, even if they don't fully understand everything in the waiver.
Right, they feel pressured.
Exactly.
So it sounds like the court wasn't just ruling in favor of the Yager family. They were trying to set a precedent for fairness and transparency across the board, right?
Yeah.
Like for all kinds of contracts, especially those with waivers.
Yeah, spot on. Yager was basically putting businesses on notice that they can't just hide important legal terms in the fine print and expect the courts to just automatically side with them.
Right.
It has to be clear. It has to be understandable by the average person, especially when you're talking about waiving your rights.
It makes you wonder, are there any limits to what you can waive? Like, can you just sign away any risk imaginable?
Well, it's not quite that simple. It really depends on the state and the specific situation. Generally speaking, though, courts are more likely to uphold waivers for activities that are inherently risky, like, you know, we've been talking about skiing, but also things like rock climbing or skydiving, that kind of stuff.
Right, right. So even when an activity is known to be risky, there are still some boundaries, right? Like,
right.
When it comes to waiving negligence. So how do courts decide where to draw that line?
Well, as we saw in Yager, courts won't enforce waivers that are too broad or too vague, especially when it comes to a business waiving liability for their own negligence.
Right.
You can't just slip in some vague clause and expect to be totally protected from any lawsuit that comes your way.
So let's say I'm drafting a waiver for a client. You know, what are some key takeaways from Yager that I need to keep in mind? Like, how can I make sure that this waiver is rock solid, that it's actually going to hold up in court?
Well, first and foremost, you got to be explicit. Don't beat around the bush. If you want someone to waive their right to sue for negligence, use the word negligence, plain and simple.
Yeah.
Spell it out. Define what you mean by it. Don't leave any room for interpretation.
So it's not enough to just say inherent risks. We need to actually specifically mention the possibility of the business being negligent and having the participant waive that specific right.
Exactly, yeah. And you have to remember, courts are going to interpret these waivers very strictly against the person who wrote them.
Right.
So if there's any ambiguity, any doubt, it's going to be resolved in favor of the person who signed it, not the business trying to enforce it.
Right, right. So it's better to err on the side of caution, even if it feels repetitive or overly cautious. What else should we be thinking about when we're drafting these things?
Well, presentation matters a lot, too. Don't just bury the waiver in some giant document. Make it a standalone document with a clear title, like Liability Waiver and Release. Use headings, use bold text, bullet points, anything that's going to draw attention to the important parts.
Right, make it easy to read. And of course, we need a separate signature line specifically for the waiver, not just a signature at the end of a long form.
Absolutely. Having a separate signature, it just reinforces that this is a distinct legal document and that the person signing it, they're doing so knowingly and voluntarily. We want informed consent here, not just a signature on a piece of paper.
Right, right. We've covered a lot of ground with Yager when it comes to waivers, but what about contracts in general? Does this case have any broader implications for just drafting any kind of agreement?
Oh, it definitely does. Yager is a good reminder that contract law, it's not just about technicalities. It's about being fair. It's about ethical considerations. And it's about protecting the public interest.
Yeah, yeah. So as lawyers, we have a responsibility to balance our clients' interests with, you know, fairness and transparency
yeah.
for everyone who's signing these agreements.
Exactly. It's not just about winning cases. It's about thinking about the bigger picture, the impact our work has on society as a whole, and that includes the documents we draft.
It really seems like Yagerve Skiing Enterprises is more than just a case about a ski resort and a tragic accident. It's about the very principles that our legal system is built on.
I think that's a great way to put it. It's a case that every lawyer should know and understand, regardless of what area of law they practice.
You know, we've really spent this episode like breaking down Yagerve Skiing Enterprises and how it impacts liability waivers. And honestly, it's been kind of mind-blowing to see how something as simple as the design of a contract can have such huge legal ramifications.
Yeah, it really shows how courts, they have to balance this, you know, freedom of contract idea with broader public policy concerns. And exculpatory clauses, they're not inherently bad, right?
Right.
There are definitely situations where they make sense. But when they're being used to shield a business from being held accountably for their own negligence, that's when courts are going to take a much closer look.
Yeah. Okay, so let's shift gears a bit. Let's put ourselves in the shoes of a lawyer who's advising a client.
Yeah.
So say I'm working with someone who owns a rock climbing gym, you know.
Right.
They're obviously concerned about liability and they want to use a waiver to protect themselves if a climber gets injured. What advice would you give them, especially considering everything we've learned from Yagerve?
Well, you know, all those practical tips we talked about earlier, they definitely come into play here. First and foremost, that waiver needs to explicitly say that climbers are assuming the risk of the gym being negligent.
Yeah.
Don't just talk about inherent risks of climbing.
Hmm.
Spell it out clearly that the waiver covers situations where the gym itself might be at fault.
So, like, I understand that the gym may be negligent, and I'm waiving my right to sue for any injuries as a result. Something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. It might seem a little redundant, but it's super important to eliminate any ambiguity, you know?
Right.
And don't forget to define those key terms. What does negligence mean in this specific context? What are the actual risks that are being covered? You know, leaving those things open to interpretation, it's just asking for trouble.
And based on Yagerve, we know that burying this waiver in some kind of like membership agreement, that's a no-go, right?
Oh, absolutely. Make it a separate document. Give it a clear title, something like liability waiver and release. Use headings, bold text, bullet points, whatever it takes to make those key parts stand out. And of course, a separate signature line just for the waiver.
Got it. So basically, we want to make it almost impossible for someone to sign this waiver without knowing exactly what they're agreeing to.
That's the goal. We're not trying to trick anybody. We're trying to make sure they give informed consent.
Right.
The climber needs to know that they're taking on a certain level of risk. And the gym needs to feel confident that that waiver is going to hold up if there's ever a lawsuit.
Okay, so let's change the scenario up a bit. What about waivers for activities that aren't inherently risky, like, I don't know, a pottery class? Does Yagerve have any implications there?
It totally does. The court in Yagerve wasn't just focused on the fact that skiing is inherently dangerous.
Right.
They were worried about the waiver being vague and whether there was real informed consent. And those principles, they apply to any waiver, no matter what the activity is.
So even for something as seemingly low risk as a pottery class, the waiver still needs to be super clear about what's being waived, including negligence.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be presented in a way that makes sure the person signing it really gets it.
Exactly. I mean, even in a pottery class, there could be risks. Faulty equipment, bad instructions, even a slippery floor. A good waiver will cover all of that in plain language that's easy to understand.
It's amazing to me how this one case, Yagerve Skiing Enterprises, can have such far-reaching implications for all kinds of businesses and activities.
It really shows the power of precedent in our legal system and how important it is to, you know, sweat the small stuff when you're drafting contracts. What might seem like a tiny drafting error can have massive consequences down the road.
So the next time you're looking over a contract or even signing one yourself, take a minute to think about Yagerve. Is the language clear? Is it easy to understand? Is the design straightforward and user-friendly? These are questions we should all be asking, whether we're writing the contract or signing on the dotted line. As we've seen today, clarity in contracts isn't just good legal practice, it's crucial for fairness, it's crucial for accountability, and ultimately it's about creating a safer world.
Well said. And on that note, we've reached the end of our deep dive into Yagerve Skiing Enterprises. We hope you found this exploration insightful. Until next time, stay curious and keep those legal minds sharp.